Show Ion Chicago Land.
Welcome back to our final segment of this edition of the Mike Kara Radio Show, Ion Chicagoland, here in the Woodridge Public Library. My guest today is meteorologist for Channel 2 on the weekend newscast, Mary Kay Kleist. And we want to talk a little bit, first of all, being in the library, as we've talked before, that we want to encourage everyone to read all about meteorology and weather. As I have mentioned numerous times, I'm kind of a junior meteorologist. I've always even been like about since five, always wondering about the weather. And the first step, I guess, Mary Kay, is the Woodridge Public Library or any local library.
Absolutely. And there's so many choices of books. And you remember Harry Volkman on Channel 2 and Channel 5? He worked everywhere, I think, at almost every station. He just wrote a book last week called Whatever the Weather. So I can't wait to read it because he is such a classic Chicago broadcaster, and he's been in it for so many years that I think he's in his 80s now, but he just had a whole huge career and covering some of Chicago's biggest storms. And I think it would be so fascinating to read his book about the weather. But then there are, you know, more technical books too. I always bring a book to the school that I'm going to and, you know, usually sign it and leave it for them, of just books I like or I would recommend. Someday I would like to write my own children's book for weather, because I think kids, especially today, I talked to third graders, and they have a huge interest in weather, that third, fourth grade. And that's when they're starting to really learn the basics of weather. And they just have the widest eyes and they're so eager to learn about it that, yeah, I think whatever your age is, if you come out to the library, you'll find something that will satisfy you.
And we were talking a little bit off the air, Mary Kay, about the camaraderie between, you know, meteorologists in the Chicagoland area, that all you guys kind of get together and you kind of exchange notes, and you're kind of a big family then.
Mm-hmm. And people might be surprised by that, because, of course, the stations in Chicago compete fiercely for ratings against one another. However, and like news reporters say, they all go to the scene of something and they're all trying to get the best sound, the best pictures. And that's more of a real challenge among one another to try to be the best or get something exclusive to the station. But with weather, it's really fun when we go to an event and we get together and we see people from other stations that do what we do and face the same challenges that we face at our station. We really do have this underlying, like, just we feel for each other and we understand what each other are going through, because for two reasons. One, we have a huge passion for weather and we're forecasting the same big event of whatever it is, or the same cold, dull spring like we've had, or the, you know, the hottest summer on record, whatever it may be, the big blizzard we just had. But also too, besides that passion, there is the commitment to schools and communities. For instance, Jerry Taft just hosted his big March of Dimes event, where the March for Babies is a big walk and raises a ton of awareness and money. And a few days before that, he does something called a Sunshine Rally. And I go every year. I think I've missed it once. But what he does is he calls all the forecasters from all the stations in Chicago together with the folks from the March of Dimes and all the sponsors that are putting out the t-shirts for the event. And he will do a forecast where we all introduced, and we do a forecast for that coming weekend, for that Sunday morning of the walk, the big event. And then we also say a few words about, you know, how much it means to be there and to help with this event. And then also we all judge the t-shirts from the different sponsors, you know, and it makes for a fun afternoon. We have lunch together. We all talk, you know, we might talk about some big storm that's either coming or just came through. But yet we're all there for the same reason. For that one, it is for the March of Dimes. But then there are other events. Some can be fun things, you know, at clubs or restaurants that we all are invited to that we show up at, or the American Meteorological Society ties us all together because many of us have the seal of approval from them. I sit on the board of the AMS for the nation, as does Tammy Souza at Fox. In fact, she's the chairperson for the broadcast board. And so she and I have become great friends over the years, over the past 10 years that I've worked here. She left for a while to work for Tampa, and then she came back recently. But I just saw her, and we have great conversations together being board members. So we're friends across the street. Tracy Butler showed up at the March of Dimes event. So then she started emailing me and Amy Fries and Tammy Souza, because we're all moms that try to work and balance a crazy TV schedule with raising kids, you know. And she was just like, it was so nice to talk to somebody else that's in this world, you know, and has the same challenges at home. So, of course, we made plans to, next time I'm filling in on the morning show, we'll go out to breakfast and, you know, chit chat and catch up. But then also Tammy is hosting the next National Weather Service Severe Storms seminar. They do two a year for us. And what they do is the Weather Service in Romeoville brings their meteorologists together. One of the TV stations hosts it. So Fox is hosting it this time. And we invite all the weather people around town. And what happens is the National Weather Service will give us a few hours of talks on maybe the latest radar or a big storm we just had. They'll go through it, dissect the whole storm, or a change that's coming to the warning system that we all should be aware of. And there's about four or five huge speeches. So it's like a seminar for us, and it's all about severe weather. And then we do one in the winter in November, talking about winter forecasting and what's new, what's different. And that way we can earn points to keep our seal that you see when you see our name on TV while we're walking and talking in front of the key wall. It says our name and then it says AMS. To keep that seal, you have to do professional development points. And one way to earn those is to go to these seminars. And they're so useful because you're getting these great talks from these great meteorologists at the Weather Service. I mean, in Romeoville, from everywhere I've worked, the Romeoville office is the best working National Weather Service office in the whole country. They have a real connection to the media. We work hand in hand with them. They even now instigated this thing where it's a live chat room. So if it's a stormy day, we can all log into it. And so the people that are on it are all the weather people in town from any station. You've got their storm spotters have capabilities of sending in reports. And then you have the Weather Service meteorologists on there too. So if you had a question, if they want to update you, if they say, hey, I think they're going to open this up and have a tornado watch tonight, you know, they'll give us a heads up. We can ask them questions back and forth. And it's a real connection between the weather people across town and the National Weather Service that I think the Chicago market is served better than any city I've ever worked in, you know, in my jobs in Savannah, in Tampa, in Detroit. There's just a huge tie that is so tight because the Weather Service feels like we're here to serve you, the media, to give you the best information. But on the same flip, we want to serve them and give them anything our viewers give us. If there's a storm report or something that comes up, our reporters stumble onto something. And I just think the more information that is exchanged between the TV stations and the Weather Service, the better off the viewer will be, especially when you're considering safety if there's severe weather or some big thing that's going to happen. We're all kind of hand in hand together in the background going through it, which is neat. So then when we show up at those events where it is something fun, like we had a big party for Harry Volkman a few years ago at Shaw's Crab House, and it was so much fun because you see all these people that are a blast from the past. You see people that work on the air now, you know, and you just get to catch up with all the weather people that work at other TV stations in a sense where it's more laid back, and we all have the same passion for weather and the same goal of serving the community and keeping everybody safe. And it's just a lot of fun because most of us, you know, have families, or we know everything about each other too. So I just enjoy that. I always enjoy running into people that do the weather across the street.
Oh, fantastic. And now I want to get back to, you know, your presentations at the schools. And now I'm not sure, I know if I was a third grader, I probably asked this question, but if you did get asked by a third grader and they say, Mary Kay, why is it 35 degrees in April? How would you answer such a question?
I know. And the problem has been, we've been in this pattern. It's been a very persistent pattern where the jet stream is diving too far to the south, opening the door too wide for all that cold Canadian air to come spilling farther south than it should be. And then with its position just so, you have these ripples of storms, almost like a parade of disturbances just coming along and coming along. So you have the unseasonably cool air in place just parked over us. And then you have these waves of low pressure just sort of riding along, bringing the chilly rain. And then if you get any days, as I mentioned, with a lake breeze, that just makes it even more damp and chilly and kind of foggy by the lakefront because you can't break that pattern, you know. So it's all about the positioning and how everything basically, you know, rotates from west to east. And that parade just isn't ending, especially this particular week. You know, it's just been the same pattern. There's been a front stuck to the south of us. It's just stationary. It's just sitting there. And those lows are coming up just enough. So we're on that northern fringe of that rain shield. But all the time, we're sitting in this unseasonably cool air mass. And we're just stuck there for a couple of days here yet.
And Mary Kay, you had mentioned a little bit ago in one of our past segments about getting, you know, struck by lightning in your car. I'm not sure if you're familiar with, you know, how car, you know, as far as the workings of cars. But I mean, if you get struck by lightning in your car, you're okay. But what about the car? I mean, is it damaged? Or?
Yeah, I think it is. It depends, of course, of how it hits you, but it'll feel like you hit something, you know, and hopefully you won't freak out and lose control and hit somebody else, you know, but it's one of those things. It's tough because in a thunderstorm, when it's, you know, pounding thunder and lightning on your car and raining like crazy, sometimes in that sense, if there was a tornado embedded in there somewhere, that's where it gets really dangerous because you can't see it. Usually you could see a funnel cloud as it's starting, you know, a funnel cloud is when you see the typical funnel coming out of a lower cloud. It's not a tornado until you see debris. And that's when everything becomes terrible with visibility because you have debris flying then. And that's what makes the color of the tornado. Say it picks up, you know, red dust out west, it looks red. Or here it picks up debris and just pieces of things and trees or whatever. It's dark. It's grayish, kind of blackish, brownish, whatever. And that creates that low visibility. But if it's already storming on you and you happen to have a tornado, you know, that's a little scarier in a car. But if you ever saw a tornado out your car window, you don't want to try to outdrive it. You never will. And the other thing is, the reason I was telling the kids this morning, we don't name tornadoes because they're so short-lived, and we're not sure if that neighborhood was wiped out by one or three or one that went for a while and then broke off into two, because they can spawn little ones, and you can't really measure the winds of it, and it's so short-lived, but it's so dramatic, you know, that you don't know. If you're trying to outdrive it, what happens if it breaks into two pieces, and now the new piece comes toward you, you know, and everybody wants to be a hero and take pictures of the storm, and that's scary, too. That's never a good idea, because you could get caught up in the moment and not realize that it's on top of you until it's too late.
Okay, and speaking about storms, you know, I know your colleague Tom Skilling, I guess, was chasing, I remember, a tornado, I guess it was in Nebraska or somewhere in the Plain States or something, and he was just having a ball. I mean, he just got so excited. You could hear his producer say, "Tom, you're going to kill yourself. Get in there." And I remember he just had such a passion. So, I mean, that's, you know, with people, especially meteorologists, that's the passion. You're going to kill yourself, but it's just the idea of tracking the storm, then it's just the passion of, you know, trying to figure out this weather.
Mm-hmm. And that's, yeah, and you have to be so cautious because it is so darn exciting. I mean, we love big weather events, you know. I hate when there's tragedies, of course, but you feel like you're helping people, at least if you can guide them through watches and warnings and tell them the difference. So many people don't even know what is the difference between a tornado watch and a tornado warning, you know, and it's too bad. That's what I always go through with the kids too, just so they know a watch means we're watching because the ingredients are coming together, you know. A warning means a tornado has been detected. That's it. It's time to go in your basement and have a plan for your family. And that's what I was telling the kids today, too. When you go home, you know, ask your parents, what should we do if we hear the sirens down the street from the fire station and we know there's a tornado, or we see the crawl on TV that talks about it being our county? And you have to have a plan, because otherwise you're going to scare your kids. The more knowledge they know, the better, you know, because they see the way, as I mentioned before, we see everything unravel live on TV with extended coverage and raw footage and everything on YouTube that's available, you know, shot by just anybody. It's a little scary to kids because they don't really understand a lot of times what they're watching. My kids are 10 and 12, and, you know, we try to keep them aware of everything without freaking them out. And I think, you know, a tornado watch, tornado warning, lightning, you know, there are major things that they need to know. And then to know it's okay, we have a family plan. If this happens, this is what we're going to do. You know, we're going to go downstairs. We're going to go away from the windows. We're going to go under the stairs. We might drag a cushion or two from the couch while we're on our way down, you know, and just be down there with our weather radio, knowing we're in the best place possible. And the key is knowing we're together.
Okay, as we get down to the nitty-gritty, Mary Kay, you know, here on the Mike Kira Radio Show, I on Chicagoland, we're all about pursuing our dreams and our passions. And we kind of touched on this a little bit, but now you have any advice for any, like, journalism students or especially future meteorologists as far as any tips how to break into the business or anything that they need to be aware of when they're going down this career path?
Well, it changed dramatically. I used to understand how to get a job in TV where you learn how to do everything to be a one-man band in a small market. You move your way up and then you specialize and you do just one thing in a big TV market. Okay, that sounds logical. And 15 years ago, it was logical. Well, now that is totally, totally different because of all this technology that we've introduced on ourselves. And what I mean is we were just trained, for instance, at CBS, how to go out and shoot a reporter story. Like, I was given a camera class of how to shoot where I don't need a photographer. I go kind of back to my Savannah days, but more so with these tiny handheld cameras that are so high tech and easy to use. They figure, why not just have the reporter do it? Because all this technology is making it so simplified as far as just one person could do it that now, you know, we're learning, you know, as a meteorologist, yes, that's why I was hired there, but they've given writing classes to fine-tune writing for reports. They've given camera classes to learn how to shoot video where there's not a photographer. They've given us constant web advice on how to post a story to the web that after you do it. Because everybody, like I mentioned, isn't reading a newspaper and they're not waiting for the 6 o'clock news. They want it now. So everything is really going toward new media, toward the web, toward Facebook and Twitter. We're supposed to pitch our stories on there, you know, so people know what we're working on, what's coming up. Or if we need a survey for a story, we might put it out there on our Facebook. And I think for kids that are in journalism now, you kind of have to get away from the idea of I'm going to just do one thing in my career with journalism. It's more like you're going to wear many hats for the whole career. So I'm glad I did that back in Savannah. So I at least had a feel for it because it would be more shocking if, you know, some people that have done one thing their whole career, it's harder for them to all of a sudden say, wait, what? I'm going to shoot video? I mean, you know, that's much harder to learn later in life when you've never done it. I mean, granted, I was definitely not a pro with it back in Savannah, but at least I got the gist of how to do it. And now with the way the cameras are made and they're lightweight and they're more automatic, you can put a good piece of HD video on the air. And since you're out there anyway as the reporter, it makes sense to shoot it that way. You know, however, I get to work with some of the greatest photographers ever at CBS, and they've worked their whole career, you know, fine-tuning, shooting and editing and just creating a story visually where the reporter never had to think about that in the past. And now all of a sudden, you know, we are starting to have to think about that because the times are changing. And it's a lot. It's like a constant learning. You know, I don't know. I just thought once I get my certifications with the weather, I'll just keep following storms and forecast and fine tune my forecasting. But a whole bunch of other doors have opened up with different ways of doing things and different ways of reporting and being online. And it's very exciting. But I think it's good for journalism students because they're used to all that technology because that's all they know. I mean, I didn't have a cell phone, I don't think, till my third TV job. And I'm not that old. I mean, I turned 40 last year, but I graduated from college in 92. I didn't have a computer at college. I thought about that and I didn't. I typed papers and then I didn't have a cell phone till, I don't know, it might have been CBS, maybe it was Detroit. But it's just like, you know, we were different that way. We had newspapers, we had, you know, more long format stuff where now everything is so quick. And these kids coming out of school, I mean, my kids are 10 and 12 and they teach me more about Twitter and Facebook and how to upload this and download that. And you know, and I think that kids today are lucky because they get that already. And I just think they have to keep using that and fine tuning that where you're almost becoming, you know, the all around journalist able to do everything. I mean, weather is different because we're certified with that specialty and that's something we'll always have, but it is exciting to do other things at the TV station as well. And I think that if you're going to go into this field, you really have to have an open mind to doing different things, you know, and Chicago is a great city because so much stuff happens between the weather, between the sports. I mean, look at our sports, how exciting that can get. And just the news that happens, you know, we make national news all the time with what's going on in our city. And it's just, it's an exciting place to be working and being home, you know, coming back to work here. I grew up watching BBM. It's crazy to think that I have the opportunity to work there now, you know, with people I saw when I was in high school and stuff. And it's just very exciting, and I feel very blessed.
Okay, Mary Kay. And also, we want to let everyone know, now you're still at the studio. It's by the Picasso, and people could still look in. I'm not sure. Oh,
yes,
great.
Yes, they can. That's our new studio we moved into a couple years ago. And it is very cool because we have that huge, huge screen. It's about as big as a billboard outside. You can watch the program if you're in Daly Plaza and you have a huge view of it. And then there's closed captioning. You could read it too, because if you're, you know, way across the street like that, you would know what's going on. But then if you get close, you can go right up to the window and we'll wave to you, you know, and people on the weekends are coming back and forth to the theater and they all are excited, or, you know, Christmas shoppers. And then in summer, everybody's out. So there's always some kind of fun crowd out there. And that can be very fun because then you feel connected with the community. You know, compared to our old station, we were sort of in a cave and you couldn't see out. There were no windows whatsoever in the weather office or in the studio. And now it's fun to kind of be on that street level in such a busy place like the Loop. I mean, even during the week, you have all your commuters coming and going. And then on the weekend, you have everybody coming down to play. And it just feels like you're part of something big.
And we just wanted to mention, Mary Kay, that now you're the meteorologist for all the weekend forecasts. Now, how many shows are there in the weekend?
On Saturday, I do a show at 5 p.m. and at 10 p.m. And then on Sunday, we do a show at 5:30 p.m. and 10 p.m. So there's four shows on the weekend.
Oh, wow. So not too many. And as you mentioned, that occasionally you will fill in during the week then.
Mm-hmm. Yes, often, because there's only three of us in the weather office and there's a lot of shows. You know, we have a morning show that starts at 5 a.m. and it goes until 9 because of the cut-ins. And then we have an 11 a.m. news. And then at night we have a 5, 6, and 10 p.m. So there's plenty of shows to cover. You know, you have a morning person, you have a night person, and then a weekend person. But if somebody's out, or, you know, if something happens, or they're on vacation, or somebody's on vacation and somebody else is sick, that leaves one person standing. So we can be spread thin, you know, at times, but it's a constant flow, because what we do is we work the shift. Like, say Sunday night, I'll work my shift, and right before I'm finishing my 10 o'clock broadcast, I'll write up a forecast page for the morning person coming in Monday. So they have a handle. They've been off since Friday at noon, you know, and maybe they're busy or doing something else or whatever. But I give them a real, like a little synopsis and a forecast broken down into 7 days of what I'm expecting and why. So when they walk in at 2 a.m, because, you know, the show's on at 5, you got to get there at 2. They've got a nice little summary to begin the day, because they know my eyes have been watching the weather all weekend for them. So then when they leave at noon, they'll leave something. So then when the afternoon person comes in, they can see what the morning person was thinking. And we try to leave our forecast for the person that's coming in next, so they have a nice handle on what we're thinking, because I think overall as a station, that leaves a nice continuity between your forecast. So it's not like I'm yanking the rain out and somebody else is putting it in, and then I come in again and yank it out, and it's back and forth and up and down and all over the place. This is more consistent. You know, you might leave somebody a note and say, gosh, all weekend I kept saying Wednesday is going to be a big snow day, but now the models are hinting it's going to be drier. See what you think. You might want to pull that snow out, but I didn't want to take it out Sunday night because I thought if you put it back in Monday, it's too much back and forth since it's not till Wednesday. So you try not to yank too many things around, but we leave notes and discussions for each other to analyze, so then they can do a better job right when they come in, flat off the bat.
And you mentioned, Mary Kay, that basically the weekend, then you're kind of on duty. So my example is, let's say that there was a major blizzard on Saturday at 11 a.m. So basically you're the person that would cover that.
Oh,
then.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yes. And, you know, then I've been known to sleep at work and live there all weekend. Yes. And just keep covering the storm. I mean, that's what we do. And you have to, you know, because that's also probably your lead news story. So they're probably even pulling in extra reporters to help work it. And they may even call in another weather person to come in on the weekend and give you a hand too. You know, I mean, at that blizzard, I think, I don't even know how many of us had hotel rooms across the street, you know, because of the coverage, because we were wall-to-wall coverage. But the problem was, I was the overlap because it was on a weekday where I don't normally have a show. So they had the luxury of using me for all that extended coverage. So I came in around 11 a.m. the day of the show, snow, and it didn't really start till the afternoon rush, but we started with cut-ins and updates. So I started at 11 a.m. We went through our news at night. Gosh, I want to say at about midnight, I went across the street, checked into the hotel, and had them wake me up an hour and a half later. And I came right back at 2 a.m. live on the air for cut-ins all the way through 2 p.m. So I didn't really need this hotel room because I was only there laying down for an hour, hour and a half. But it was a place to go, you know, just take a shower and change, make it feel like a different day. But usually if it's a huge event like that, they'll just bring in everybody and just do the wall-to-wall coverage and then just try to give each other breaks when we get the opportunity. But yeah, if it's a weekend of severe weather, and I know on Saturday night that, gosh, Sunday morning, that big squall line is going to come through at about 9 or 10 in the morning. That's going to be huge. You know, the models are showing, you know, a moderate risk of severe weather, blah, blah, blah. Then I'll probably come in super early that next day and just sort of babysit the radar and make sure that, you know, it doesn't blow up to something huge. Because if it does, you're there and you can do the live coverage. And if it doesn't, well, fine. At least you feel better about being there.
Okay, Mary Kay, I want to thank you so much. Appreciate all of your time. And any final thoughts or anything else you'd like to mention?
I just think it's so exciting to do weather in Chicago because people in Chicago love the weather. I mean, not the weather as it is, but talking about the weather, watching the weather. Everywhere I go, especially if I'm just in like sweats and a ponytail and no one really realizes I work in weather and I can hear people talking about the weather, they're actually excited, you know, about whatever it is. You know, I think people really have a passion for weather in general and a great interest in it. And then I know how serious it can be. So I find it very rewarding to be able to help people out and guide them through a storm whenever we get the chance. But every time I go to work, every day is different. And I feel like I'm serving the community, you know, with my knowledge the best way that I can. And then I like to, you know, go to special events, especially when it involves children, because I love to bring that light into their eyes and get them excited about the weather too.
And can someone see your, now does Channel 2 webcast the weekend news or?
Yes. If you just go to cbschicago.com, you can see our latest forecast of whoever just worked. That's up. And then if you want to see any of my stories, just go to my page, click on me, and then you can see some of my reports that I've done and just watch a few.
Okay. My guest has been Mary Kay Kleist, a meteorologist for Channel 2, CBS WBBM, our CBS affiliate in Chicago. You've been listening to the Mike Kara Radio Show, Eye on Chicagoland, here in the Woodbridge Public Library. And please catch us again next time.